I am the ascended master Gautama Buddha. I will reach back to a statement I made now those 2,500 years ago when I was in a physical body on earth. One of the core teachings of Buddhism is that everything is the Buddha nature. What does this actually mean? Many people have been confused by this. Many sincere, well-meaning followers of Buddhism have speculated on this, have come up with various theories and interpretations, many of them valid to a certain extent. I do not in any way wish to criticize or replace those, but I want to give you a perspective based on the collective consciousness as it is today and based on the teachings we have given so far. If you understand that everything is the Buddha nature, that means that the Buddha nature must be beyond form. You look at form in this universe, you look at this chair, you look at the carpet, you look at a window, you look at a table. Can you say that table is the Buddha nature? You would not say that. But what you could say is that the table is made out of the Buddha nature. In other words, if you could see behind the form, beyond the form, there would be the Buddha nature. This is something that was difficult for people to understand 2,500 years ago. It has become a little easier for people to grasp this with a mental mind today, because you have been brought up with the concept that this chair, this table, is made out of smaller units called molecules, atoms, even subatomic particles. So you might say everything is atoms. Therefore, this chair is also atoms. This, of course, doesn't mean that atoms look like the chair. You know that atoms are invisible to the naked eye, and therefore atoms do not have what you normally call form. They do not have the form of tables and chairs. They may have some form as you have been brought up to think, but it is not what you see with the senses. So you can therefore make the leap of saying that as the chair is made up of atoms, atoms are made up of the Buddha nature. But the difference is that the Buddha nature has no form. It has no conceivable form. No form that is conceivable to a mind that is still focused in this material universe. What you can say is that the Buddha nature has the potential to take on form. But if the Buddha nature has no form, why do you need the Buddha nature? Well, you need it because if there was no formless nature that could take on form, how would form be created? What can you deduce when you look at the findings of science? You take a visible thing, a visible form, such as a chair, and you realize that this chair did not suddenly appear out of the blue, out of nature, or out of nothing in its present form. It wasn't that there was a point where you could say Now there is no chair, now there is a chair. Bam, it just happened like that. That is not the way things are made, you know this. You know that a chair is made out of metal. This metal started out as different kinds of ores in the ground. They had to be dug out, they had to be melted, they had to be turned into iron. And this iron then had to be processed again to take on a certain form to become the legs of the chair. Then there was some wood that had to be manufactured and put together. There was some covering, there was some padding, and all of this had to be made in order to make the chair. But all of these raw materials, as you call them, also did not appear out of the blue. The iron ore that lay in the ground is made up of iron molecules. But the molecules are made up of an even smaller unit called atoms. The atoms are made up of subatomic particles. And even the subatomic particles are made up of energy waves. So as you go to the different stages of what it takes to produce a given form, a visible form, you go towards finer and finer levels. In a sense, you could say that you go towards more simple forms. A chair, or an even more elaborate construction like the entire building, is very complex. But molecules are less complex, atoms are even less complex, subatomic particles even less. So you're going towards a state of lesser and lesser complexity, a less and less pronounced form. So is it so difficult to take that leap and say, you must come to a point where there is a basic substance, at least the basic substance we can conceive of from this universe.
Thank you all for coming and being together
at this conference. And this basic substance has no form, but it has the potential to take on any form. And this we can call the Buddha nature. The Buddha nature is in a certain way more than this, but we can at least, to give you some way to visualize or conceive of this, say that the Buddha nature is the basic substance out of which all form is fashioned. Now there are those who will say that this is not according to the current scientific paradigm. But this is because the current scientific paradigm is based on cognitive dissonance. Science has proven that you can go towards these deeper and deeper levels beyond the visible forms. The logical conclusion is there must be some basic substance out of which everything is created. The problem with science is that it is so influenced by the materialistic paradigm that there cannot be anything beyond the material universe. And the way materialists conceive of this means that there cannot be a substance that has no form, because that would be nothing. And nothing can appear out of nothing, they say. It's perfectly true. Nothing appears out of nothing, or rather, no thing appears out of nothing. All things appear out of the Buddha nature, the basic substance. And the idea of a basic substance that has no form but is the source of all form is actually perfectly in accord with scientific findings. Maybe not with a materialistic paradigm, but the materialistic paradigm is simply one possible interpretation of scientific findings. And the materialistic paradigm cannot even explain all of the current scientific findings, and thereby you can see that it is lacking. So there is a basic substance called the Buddha nature, out of which all form is made. What does that really mean? Well, you have a concept that many human beings are very attached to and think is very important, and it is the concept called reality. Something is real or it is not real. But if everything that you see in the material universe is conceived out of a basic substance that has no form, can you really say that all of the forms you see are real? They do not have an existence of their own. They do not have an independent existence. If there was no Buddha nature, if there was no basic substance, there could be no form. Every form you can see, the table, the chair, the sun, the stars, is made out of the same basic substance. Now, that basic substance that makes up this chair could be transformed, or rather it could be returned to its formless state, and then it could be used to fashion an entirely different form, such as a flower or a distant star. Because in that Buddha nature, in that basic formlessness, there is no time, there is no space, there is no locality. Once the substance that makes up this chair is returned to formlessness, it could instantly, or beyond time, be used to form a star millions of light years away. So can you really say that this chair is real, when it has no independent, self-sufficient existence? It has a dependent existence, because it is dependent ultimately on the Buddha nature. But the chair could not exist on its own. What would be the meaning of a chair if there wasn't a floor for the chair to sit on? Or if there wasn't a person to sit on the chair? Would the chair ever have come into existence if it wasn't for human beings who conceived of a need to sit elevated from the floor? So it is true, no thing can appear out of nothing. But the Buddha nature is not nothing. So you see here, everything, every form, has a dependent origination, an interdependent origination. It doesn't appear in a vacuum, it doesn't appear out of nowhere. It is made out of a basic substance, but it is made for a purpose, for a reason. It could not exist without the floor, without the walls, without the roof, without human beings. All of these things, it could not have been made if there wasn't an earth where there was iron ore, if there wasn't trees that grew and became wood, and so forth and so on. So what you see is that nothing, no form, no thing can be considered real in an ultimate sense. No thing exists by itself, exists independently. Everything is connected. Everything is interdependent. The entire universe is one interconnected, interdependent whole. This is actually in accordance with the discoveries of science, scientists have discovered that locality, separateness, does not exist. Non-locality, interconnectedness, is the deeper reality. So the reality that you see when you reach what I called enlightenment is that there is no separate thing anywhere in the universe. Everything is interdependent. Not only that, you see that no thing is permanent. What has science shown that many religions did not show? They have shown that there is a long process that gradually brings forth different forms. There is no instant creation. There is a gradual creation where that which was created before or that which came into existence before becomes the foundation for that which comes into existence after. So again, interdependent originations reaching very, very far back. I know the linear mind will say there must have been an ultimate beginning, but let us set that aside for now. Let us just consider that as far as we can see back in time, there has been this gradual process, again, proving the interconnectedness of everything. So what is the purpose of this entire process, of these interdependent originations, where the deeper reality of the Buddha nature takes on all of these different forms? What is the purpose? Materialism says there is no purpose. It just all happened by chance. What is chance? Can they explain what chance is? What is randomness? Define it. You cannot. Why? Because true randomness can have no form. And in a materialistic paradigm, only that which has form is considered real. Cognitive dissonance. You claim to have a worldview. But this worldview, in order to explain how things could have originated, must rely on something called chance, randomness. Your worldview says that only things that have form are real. But chance and randomness have no form, so how can they be real? And if they are not real, how could they have created all the forms that you create are real, you claim are real? Cognitive dissonance. Another level of cognitive dissonance. Who are you that claim there is only the material world, that only that world exists? Who are you? You are self-aware beings. The only reason you can say there is something that is real and something that is unreal is because you have self-awareness. Where did self-awareness come from? Can you explain how chance and randomness could produce self-awareness that looks for order everywhere? How could this occur? Can you explain it? If you cannot explain it, perhaps your explanation is not complete. Perhaps it is not even real. So, if people are open to looking for an alternative explanation, here it is. All of the forms you see in this visible physical material world were created for one purpose. to give self-aware beings a particular experience. You, human beings, consider yourselves to be the most advanced life form on Earth. But again, cognitive dissidence, you claim, you think, that you are one of the latest, if not the latest, life form to emerge on Earth. What sense does it make that the most advanced life form was created last? Does it not make more sense to say that everything that was created, every form that has appeared, is centered around the most advanced life form in order to give those self-aware beings a particular experience? You may look at a theater. What is the purpose of the theater? To give the audience a certain experience. Well, would the theater ever have appeared as the result of a random process? Would it ever have built itself? And then after the theater was built, somehow the audience came into being. Would it not make more sense that the theater from the very beginning was built with the audience in mind? So what is the world? You have a concept in today's world based on technology brought forth by science, certainly, of a reality simulator. You can put on goggles, you can go into a certain specially constructed room, and all of a sudden you are seeing for your eyes an artificially created environment. What is the purpose of creating a reality simulator? It is to give the person who uses the simulator a particular experience. Now, you may say, but that experience is not based on reality. The person is not experiencing a real world. But the person thinks it's a real world, experiences it as if it was a real world. And therefore, from the person's point of view, the person is having a real experience. And because it has that experience, it may change its consciousness, shift its consciousness, have a different worldview. It may feel saturated by a certain experience until it eventually decides that it has had enough of that experience. Now it wants a different experience. Now, there are some that would be cynical and say, but this is all nonsense, nothing that the person experiences is real. So what makes you sure that what you experience in the world is real? Is it so difficult to make the leap and say, what I can experience in a reality simulator seems real while I am inside of it? So could it not be that planet Earth is a more sophisticated reality simulator than anything built by man? Certainly you would say that when you are inside the Earth, inside a physical body on Earth, what you experience through that body and the senses seems quite real, does it not? And you might say, if you are a materialist, but what is the value of having an experience that is not real? Well, it doesn't matter whether the world you experience inside a reality simulator is real or not. What matters is, how does the experience you are having, the temporary experience you are having, affect your consciousness? The experience is temporary, but your consciousness is ongoing. And a temporary experience can have an effect on your consciousness that sets your consciousness on a new track, gives it a new direction, gives it a new sense of self. This is the purpose of a reality simulator. So all you need to do is make that leap and realize the Earth is a reality simulator. You might say that because everything is the Buddha nature, everything could be returned to its pure formless state and changed into another form. No form on Earth is ultimately real. Even scientists know that the Earth has not existed forever, will not exist forever. So according to a scientific definition, we must say nothing on Earth is real. But does that matter? What matters is that for the billions of self-aware beings who have entered the reality simulator called Earth, the world seems real. And because it seems real, it gives them an experience that shifts their consciousness, their ongoing sense of self. This is the entire purpose. So we might say that planet Earth is a reality simulator that is designed to give self-aware beings a specific type of experience. What is the experience that planet Earth is designed to give you? Well, there are two types of experiences, two types of quite different experiences that the Earth is designed to give you. One is an immersion experience, where you feel that you are living in a real world. You are completely identified with your physical body, with your mind, and you are identifying yourself as a real being living in a real world. And this world has an impact on how you see yourself. In other words, the world defines you. This is the immersion experience. The vast majority of people on Earth are still in this type of experience. They are still in the immersion phase. They think the world is real. They think the experience they have is real. And they are convinced not only that they are in a real world, but that their perception of the world, their idea of what kind of world they are in, is also real. And this is the uniqueness of the Earth reality simulator, that it can contain 7 billion self-aware beings who are all in the same environment, although there are different outer environments around the planet, but they are on the same planet, yet they are all having an individual, subjective experience of that planet. In other words, The outer environment is the same for large numbers of people, but the inner experience they are having is different for each one. Why is that so? Because, as I said, the entire purpose of the world of form is to give self-aware beings a particular experience. How do they have that experience? Well, they don't have the experience outside their minds. You cannot, as even philosophers have said, experience the world as it is, because you are experiencing the world through your own mind. And this means that the characteristics of your mind influence how you see the world. Even quantum physics has proven that the mind of the scientists influences the measurement. So each human being is having a particular experience. Each human being is convinced that his or her experience is real. But where does that sense of reality come from? If everything really is created out of a basic substance and no form is permanent, no form is independent, there is no reality outside of people's minds. So the sense of reality must come from inside people's minds. Where else would it come from? How then is it possible that two people can live in the exact same environment, but have very different experiences of that environment, where one person might be a devout Christian who is convinced that the environment is and functions the way it is described in the Bible, and another may be an equally devout materialist who is convinced that the world functions the way it is described in a materialist Bible. Well, it is because each person has in his mind what we might call a filter that filters out some of the signals that come to that person through the senses. The mind filters out some of them. The mind superimposes a certain image upon what comes through. And therefore, to the Christian worldview seems real. And to the materialist worldview seems real. None of the worldviews are real in any ultimate sense. It is not even meaningful to discuss whether one is more real than the other, more correct than the other. They are simply worldviews created inside the reality simulator on Earth. And a reality simulator is a simulator. It isn't reality, it simulates reality. This means that no worldview that could be produced inside the simulator is real. It only seems real when you look at it from a certain perspective through a certain mind filter. A filter or a state of mind that filters out some signals and superimposes a certain interpretation on the other signals. And when you do not question that filter, when you do not even realize it is a filter, then what you experience through the filter seems real to you. This then is the immersion phase of the reality simulator called Earth. What is the other phase? Well, it is the awakening phase. You are now beginning to awaken from this sense that you live in a real environment and that everything you experience in that environment is real. But how do you awaken from this sense? By coming to the point, which happens after time, of being willing to question your worldview, your filter, the filter that filters out certain signals and imposes an interpretation on the ones it is letting through. When you begin to question that worldview, that is when you begin to awaken. What is it you see on planet Earth? You see that people have created many different worldviews. If you go back in time, you see that there were civilizations that existed on Earth, but separated by distance, separated by oceans. There was a Mayan civilization that had a worldview that was very, very different from the European worldview of the same time. But because they were separated by the Atlantic Ocean, none of the two worldviews knew of their existence, the other's existence. So therefore, civilizations could live, perhaps for centuries, without having any challenge to their worldview. All of this is perfectly in order. It is perfectly in alignment with the purpose of the reality simulator. There was a time when it was necessary that there were these separate civilizations that were dominated by a particular worldview, and they didn't interact, so there was no challenge to the worldview of a particular civilization. There was a certain time where people were meant to live in the reality simulator called Earth, and there was no challenge to their worldview. They were allowed to have the experience that they were having through their worldview for a very long period of time. But you see, the human mind is restless. A human being is a being that is not created in a static state. It has a very deep and inbuilt and inherent desire to grow. So because of this desire to grow, it is impossible for a human being to have the same experience for an indefinite period of time and being fully immersed in that experience, thinking what it experiences is real. You cannot have that experience forever. You cannot be in the same experience forever. Because there comes a point where you are saturated with that experience. You want more. There is a period where you are saturated with one type of experience. Now you want another type of experience. You want something different. And that is why you could see people who incarnated in one civilization for many lifetimes, then switched and incarnated in another civilization, so they had a different experience, but still on Earth. But there also comes a point where now you do not simply want different types of experience that are possible in reality similar Earth. You want something that is more than what you can have on Earth. That is when a life stream starts the awakening phase. Now, what guides what type of experience people are having, how long they should have it? Well, it is free will. However, what makes it possible to have the type of experiences you can have on Earth? Well, as I said, the chair does not appear out of nowhere. One human being does not appear out of nowhere. There is, in order to produce the kind of experiences that are possible in the reality simulator of Earth, many people are needed. So you can see that there is a certain civilization with perhaps millions of people, and the experience they are having depends on all of the people being there and interacting. This creates a certain connection between these beings. You can say that each self-aware being, as we have said, starts out with a point-like self-sense of identity. Now, if you were alone in an entire universe, it would be difficult to expand that sense of identity. It would certainly take a long time. But because you are not alone, because there are other self-aware beings in your world, then by interacting with those other beings, you can expand your sense of self more quickly, because you are challenged somewhat. You see that there are other ways to look at life, other ways to explain the world. And so this is what actually facilitates the purpose of the reality simulator, which is the growth in awareness, the expansion of the sense of self of the beings who are inside it. And so there is a point where a certain group of people need to live together in some group form, but they need to live isolated in order to build that sense of identity that they have created in that group. But there also comes a point where the desire to experience something more becomes more dominant in the minds of at least some of these people. But how can that happen? How can you experience something different or something more if everybody is trapped in the same worldview? So, in some cases, people can question their worldview. But that only happens when you start moving into the awakening phase. That is when you begin to voluntarily and from inside yourself question your worldview. But it is difficult to make the transition directly from the immersion phase to the awakening phase. There is sort of an intermediary step where now a civilization can no longer remain isolated. It comes into contact with another civilization that has developed separately for a very long time. So you see that, for example, the Mayan civilization had taken centuries to develop to the point it was at in the 1500s. The European civilization had also taken a long time to develop. But now the two were brought together, and this was an opportunity for both of them to transcend their previous state. I know some will say that it had disastrous consequences for the Mayans as their civilization was brutally suppressed by the Europeans. But nevertheless, there was still that opportunity that both of them saw that there was a different way to live, a different way to look at life. And this was an opportunity for growth. Now, of course, you can say that when two civilizations with different worldviews suddenly come together, what will inevitably happen? Well, both civilizations have the sense that their worldview is not a worldview, it is reality. It is based on some higher authority, some ultimate truth. And therefore, there is an inevitable conflict. There is clashes. People feel their worldview is threatened. What is the purpose of this? Well, the purpose of this is that when a particular group of life streams, such as the billions of people that are associated with the Planet Earth Reality Simulator, have grown to a certain level, then there will be some that are more, that are closer to the awakening phase than others. But there will be others who will cling to their worldview and their sense of reality that it gives them, and therefore refuse to question their worldview. And if these beings who cling to their worldview were left alone, they might stay in the reality simulator for a very, very long time. In fact, they might become stuck in a certain worldview. So, because all people, all life streams who live in a certain reality simulator are interconnected, it is actually within the law of free will that some pull up on the others. But more than that, there is a certain experience you can have by living in an isolated civilization that has a particular worldview. But what happens when your civilization clashes with another civilization that has a different worldview? Well, is it not just another experience? Another type of experience you can have in the reality simulator. First, you have the experience that there is only one worldview, and that is the one held by your civilization. Then you have the experience there are other worldviews. For that matter, there are many other worldviews. And they are all different. They all claim to be real or be based on some higher authority. What happens when people see this? Well, some people will cling to the belief that theirs is the only true one, and they must force other people to adhere to that worldview. But other life streams begin to say, but if there are so many different worldviews that all claim to be real, then logically they cannot all be correct. They cannot all be real if they are so different, even opposite. Well, this is then when a being starts the awakening phase. It starts consciously questioning these various worldviews. And eventually it comes to a point where it starts questioning, why do we human beings create these worldviews? Why do we need them? And it starts questioning, is it possible that all of the worldviews on Earth are limited, do not tell us the whole story of how the world works? Is there perhaps a higher worldview that hasn't been manifested on Earth yet? And then there comes that even further advanced stage where people start saying, what if there is no worldview on Earth that is ultimately real? And what if it is meaningless to talk about which worldview is real or which one is the ultimate? What if I should just stop feeling threatened by the fact that there are different worldviews? What if I should realize and recognize that a worldview only has one purpose? That purpose is not to define reality, not to describe how the world absolutely works. The only purpose of a particular worldview is to give a particular group of people a certain experience. So why should I be concerned about other people having different worldviews than myself? Why should I not say, let me focus on my worldview and the experience that I can have through that worldview? Let me enjoy that experience. Let me immerse myself in that experience. Let me have that experience until I've had enough of it. And then when I feel I've had enough of that experience, then what are my options? Well, I can look for a different worldview that can give me a different experience. Nothing wrong with that. You might even switch in one embodiment, but otherwise you can certainly switch from lifetime to lifetime to different worldviews. And you can eventually come to the point where you can realize that if the Earth is a reality simulator, what if there is something outside the simulator? What if there's another world outside the simulator? You know, when you go into a specially constructed room on Earth that projects a simulated environment, you know there is still what you call the real world outside the simulator. But if what you have so far seen as the real world is just a bigger simulator, what if there's something outside that simulator? And what if that something is actually more real, perhaps even actually the real world outside the simulator? In other words, what we have called natural planets that are in an upward spiral of transcending themselves consciously, constantly, can be considered the real world, and the unnatural planets are a simulator. You could also say that the entire undescended sphere is a type of simulator, and only the ascended realm is the real world, however you want to look at it. But nevertheless, the option you have is to come to a point where you say, where you realize, I have had enough of the simulator of Earth. I have had enough of the kind of experiences I can have in this simulator. What if I could graduate? What if I could permanently exit the simulator instead of just reincarnating time and time again? Well, how do you then do that? You must come to realize, my beloved, that every worldview, any worldview you could possibly have inside the simulator called Earth, is not ultimately real. It is given to facilitate a certain type of experience, or it is created, generated, to facilitate a certain type of experience. Now you may look at Earth and you may say, but what about all the warring, all the conflicts? What is the purpose of that? Well, the Earth is a special type of reality simulator. When you consider the fact that self-aware beings are created with a point-like self-sense of identity and are given free will as to how they will expand that sense of identity, you realize that when you have a point-like sense of identity, how is it possible for you to realize that everything is interconnected? How is it possible for you to realize what I have said, the truth about the interdependent originations? There you are, you have appeared as a self-aware being. You experience yourself as a distinct being, different from other beings. You live in a certain environment. You are different from that environment. So how do you start building a sense of identity? Well, you must start by seeing yourself as a separate being. So this is what a reality simulator of like Earth is designed to facilitate. Only it is designed to give you a special type of experience as a separate being. We have said there are natural planets, and on natural planets you also start out as with a point like self of sense of identity. You see yourself as somewhat separate beings, but you realize there's more to your identity than that point-like sense of self. That is why on natural planets you do not have the conflicts between human being, between self-aware beings. But on Earth you have the conflict because, as we have explained, as an ultimate consequence of giving beings free will, it must be possible that you can explore all of the realms of what kind of choices you can make. This means that it must be possible for you to have the experience of what it means to be a completely separate being who can do whatever it wants, regardless of what the consequences are for other separate beings. You can do whatever you want, and you can have the belief that you can get away with it. So, planet Earth gives you that experience where you have no sense of connection to your own higher being. You have no sense of connection to other beings. You can deny that your actions have consequences for others, or that it matters that they have consequences for others, that it will affect you. On a natural planet, where beings are aware that everything is connected, they know that everything they do affects the whole. That is a different type of experience than what you can have on Earth. On Earth, you can have this experience that you are not connected to the whole. You are a separate being living among other separate beings. And therefore, what you do may have a visible physical consequence, but it doesn't have any consequence beyond that. It doesn't affect the whole. The thing is, once people have gone into this sense of being separate beings, again, they have a strong sense of reality. This is real. We are really separate beings. We are really living in a separate world. We are the superior beings on Earth. We are more important than anybody else. Our religion is the only true one. Therefore, it is justified, it is necessary that we kill all those who will not follow our religion. This is an experience you can have in the reality simulator on Earth, and it is part of the full range of free will. But what if people got stuck in this type of experience? Well, the safety mechanism is that even though they are experiencing themselves as separate beings, they are not actually separate beings because they are interconnected with all of the other beings who are in the same reality simulator. And therefore, when some people start waking up, it will pull on all the others. That is why you have seen, as there has been an evolution in humanity, in human society, new technologies have been brought forth that allows separate civilizations to now start interacting, and you can see how the world has become more and more connected, with the internet becoming the latest stage of this. And therefore you see that people's worldviews will now begin to clash more. And this is because human beings collectively have entered that beginning of the awakening phase. There are some that are still holding on to the separateness. But it is perfectly within the law of free will for a particular reality simulator that they are having their worldviews challenged by other worldviews, so that they can get an opportunity to question them. And you may say, well, many people are not taking advantage of this opportunity. And that is, of course, correct for this lifetime, perhaps for many lifetimes. But nevertheless, the earth is constructed in such a way that in the phase that the earth is in right now, or that humanity is in, you cannot live on this planet without being aware that there are other worldviews, and therefore without having your worldview challenged. And there will come a point, there will come a time for almost all beings where they become open to questioning their worldview. This will especially happen because you will not incarnate in the same worldview for an indefinite period of time. Many people shift between different civilizations and different worldviews from embodiment to embodiment. So, all get this opportunity to question their worldview. This is perfectly within the range of free will, because all human beings on earth are connected, and so when some people start awakening, it is perfectly in order that they pull up on the rest and therefore challenge them to also start to question their worldview. Now, based on this, we can say, does it give any meaning to try to get other people to question their worldview? Look at how religious people have become convinced that they have the only true religion, or communists have been convinced that they have the only true political system, or materialists have been convinced that they have the only true worldview. And they have become missionaries who are seeking to convert others. Does it give any meaning? Well, of course it gives meaning, because this is another experience you can have. In the range of experiences possible in a reality simulator on Earth, you can have this sense that I have the ultimate worldview and therefore I need to convert all others to this worldview. And so you have that for some lifetimes until you have had enough of that, and then you step up to a higher view where now you are focusing on experiencing your own worldview, your chosen worldview. And eventually you step up to where you start questioning the worldviews that are currently on earth, looking for something higher. And this is where there can come this shift in people's minds. Because the next step up in awareness is the realization that the earth is a reality simulator. Yes, it is. But what you see in a reality simulator on Earth is that there is the machine, there is the room that you go inside, but it doesn't function by itself. Outside of the room is an operator. And the operators that operate the reality simulator on Earth are the beings who, for the most part, have been inside the reality simulator of Earth and have sort of graduated. They have had enough of the experiences you can have there. Then they have exited the reality simulator, but instead of moving on, they have dedicated themselves to working with those who are still inside the reality simulator. So the option you have at a certain point is to look at many of the worldviews that exist on Earth and realize they were created inside the reality simulator. Perhaps some of them had some input from outside the simulator. But then people took their current level of consciousness, projected that onto that impulse coming from the outside, and they created a new worldview that was created inside the simulator. So once you begin to realize this, you can say, well, what if I could get something directly from those operators outside the simulator? And when the student is ready, the teacher appears. That is why, throughout the ages, some people have become ready to receive something from outside the simulator, and they have received it. When I walked the earth in a physical body 2,500 years ago, did I come up with the teachings of Buddhism all by myself? Was I a being who was still inside the simulator, but who came up with this teaching? Nay. I realized the limitations of the worldviews that I saw at the time. And I opened my mind to reaching out for something from beyond the simulator. And I received it. And that became the teachings of Buddhism. They were given from outside the simulator. But of course, since then, people who did not have the direct contact with the operators outside the simulator, they used their current worldview to superimpose ideas upon this teaching and create what you today call the religion of Buddhism. Some have maintained a certain level of purity to the original teachings. Others have imposed an interpretation that is quite different from the original teachings. But what very, very few have done is to take the original teachings of Buddhism and use them to connect to the operators outside the simulator. When Jesus walked the earth 2,000 years ago, he had also reached that level of consciousness where he had questioned all of the world views that he had seen on earth. He had realized that many of those world views were entirely created inside the reality simulator. They were based on the experiences people were having inside the reality simulator. They had superimposed those experiences upon those world views. And this is perfectly fine because it gives people a certain experience and the sense that that experience is real. The problem is, if it is a problem, that a worldview created based on the current conditions of the reality simulator cannot help you get out of the reality simulator. It will keep you in it. So Jesus reached the point where he was willing to see this. He saw this. He saw the limitations of these worldviews. He was willing to question them. He was willing to come to the point where he said, is it possible that I am my own self can do nothing, but that there is something, the Father, outside of me, who can give me a different perspective than I can receive from inside this world? And then he reached out, and as the law states, when the student is ready, the teacher must appear. And Jesus was then given a teaching from outside the simulator. What have people done to that teaching? Well, as Jesus said in his dictation earlier today, they have completely distorted it. What he called the consciousness of Satan is what I call the consciousness that exists inside the reality simulator and that may be able to conceive that there could be something from outside the simulator. But once it has made contact with outside, it wants to force that experience to fit inside the worldview that is created inside the simulator. In other words, instead of using that contact with the outside to transcend the simulator, it uses it to reinforce and validate the worldview that keeps you in the simulator. Could you not say, well, isn't that just another experience people can have where they feel that their worldview is validated by some ultimate authority, whether they call it God or something else? And of course it is. It's another type of experience. But again, because all beings inside the simulator are interconnected, it is also perfectly in order that some people reach for a higher experience and therefore bring forth something that can challenge the existing worldviews. So, based on this, you can say, well, there are some worldviews on earth that say that something has gone wrong with God's creation. And that's why you see all the misery and suffering and conflict on earth. But based on the perspective I have given you, nothing has gone wrong. The earth is a reality simulator designed to give the beings inside a certain range of experiences. They have free will to choose what kind of experience they want. In a sense, they are not even choosing between pre-existing experiences. They have a certain freedom to define their own experiences, which is what they have done by creating all these clashing worldviews. Nothing has gone wrong. The only question is, have you, as an individual, had enough of the experiences that you currently see on earth? Then you can do two things if you have had enough. You can seek to make contact with the operators outside the simulator, bring forth some impulse that can help you to define another worldview that gives you an experience that nobody has had on earth before. This is also perfectly valid. But the other option is to realize that you have had enough of all of the kind of experiences, the type of experiences you can have on earth, the type of experience you can have as a separate being. You want to step up to that deeper realization that although you started out as a point-like being, you have now expanded your sense of identity where you can realize that you are not a separate being. You are part of an interconnected whole. And instead of experiencing what you can experience as a separate being, you want to have that experience of being connected. And so, when you come to this point, that is when you can start the ultimate phase of the awakening process that can lead to your permanent exit from the reality simulator of Earth, which of course is what we call the ascension. Could it be called other things? Of course. But we are giving you a teaching that we are not claiming is the ultimate teaching. But it is a teaching that is specifically designed to help those who are willing to do that exit the simulator as quickly as possible. For many people, it can be done in one lifetime because you have already done other things in previous lifetimes. And so that is the only purpose. We are not having the purpose of giving you an ultimate truth. And the reason for this is very simple. The purpose of our teachings is not to give you another type of experience you can have in the reality simulator of Earth. The purpose of our teachings is to help you permanently exit the simulator. Could there be other teachings that could help you exit the simulator? Certainly. Buddhism is one teaching that has helped some people. Christianity in its pure form has also helped some people. Even Islam has helped some people when they took the mystical approach to it. Other teachings have done so. But what we are giving today is based on the collective consciousness as it is today. So it is designed for those who have reached those higher levels of awakening and are ready to take the final steps. This was what I wanted to give you in this installment. For some, maybe a big mouthful. Some people will read it and say this is meaningless gibberish. Others will read it and say this could never come from the Buddha. Others will read it and say this could not come from the ascended masters. Let them have that experience. What is that to thee? You follow the teachings that resonate with you and that you know can help you exit the simulator. And then when you do exit the simulator, certainly I will be there to greet you, as will Jesus, Saint Germain, Master More, Mother Mary, and many other ascended masters. In fact, we may have to stand in line to greet you. But then again, since we are in a state of oneness, that is perfectly okay with us. With this, my beloved, my gratitude for having allowed me to bring forth this teaching, this address. It could not have been given to just anybody, but only to people who had opened their minds to being able and willing to receive it. So you see, there is always the interdependent originations. We of the Ascended Masters cannot bring forth something on earth out of the blue. We are depending on someone inside the simulator raising their consciousness to the point where they can receive it. For that, I am grateful. And with that, I seal you and I seal this conference in my flame of Buddhic gratitude.